When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello, everyone, and it's good news for the Blues, and there's no more time to lose. Thank you all for taking your time out from having Spinners of the Blues probably blasting on repeat like it's been in our flat to tune in to the latest Royal Blue Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Jones, and I'm today joined by Sam Carroll, Dave Prentice, Chris Beasley and Gab Buckland, as we discuss a chart-topping hit for the Blues, yet another Everton win, of course, at the weekend, and we look ahead to another game, which is very close on the horizon for Everton. But Preno, we'll kick off with the song Spirit of the Blues is top of the UK iTunes chart. And Twitter, I've got to say, has been absolutely hilarious over the past few days, to be honest.
It's just made for a great weekend, hasn't it? I mean, we had Saturday afternoon, which was, you know, a bit more attritional than we're used to, although gilded by James Rodriguez's absolutely magnificent pass. Just made the game for me, that. But then it followed up with the ladies beating Chelsea on Sunday afternoon in the FA Cup. So you think, wow, you know, what a great weekend this has been. And then suddenly, we see Spirits of the Blues, all these like videos, which were very, very good. And Diego Maradona kicked it off. That's the first one I saw. And then like, there just seemed to be hundreds of them, so different ones, like so inventive, minute after minute. And it's just like, my son said, do you know it's actually climbing up the charts here? It's actually 41 in the charts. I thought, oh, surely not. Then it goes up to 20, then it goes up to 10. And then, you know, obviously everybody got on board then. 79 pence to download. Next thing, top of the iTunes charts. So it just made for a great weekend. And I just underlines the spirit, I mean, no pun intended, around the football club at the moment. The fans are really enjoying themselves. It's fun to watch Everton and to be an Evertonian again. And it is. It's been a great start to the season and long may it continue.
Sam, like, we've been watching loads of these videos this morning, to be honest, haven't we? Do you have a favourite one?
My dad made one, which was decent.
Your dad's made one?
My dad was right onto it. So yeah, and if anyone's listening, Stewie 1973, give that a little watch and a retweet.
There he is, giving his dad a shout out on the podcast.
Personal PR. to be honest, I think it was just a great moment. Like, I seen someone put on Twitter last night that it was 10th, and then I looked at my phone and it said Preno was ringing me, and you think, oh, this is never good. And he's like, I've just bought it myself. And then Danny wanted me to buy it for him, and Melanie wanted to buy it. So it turns out he bought Spirit of the Blues for the whole household. So I think Preno played a big part in it. And then my mum was buying it. So it was great. It was just, and then it reached number one. So yeah, as Preno said, you know what, just a genuinely boss weekend to be an Evertonian. I think, you know, I was saying to, so I went to the women's match yesterday, and I was saying to one of the other reporters there that when you support Everton, it obviously is a lifetime of misery that you sign up for. So this has been quite a nice kind of like, this is basically what it must be like to support any other football team ever. Actually give you some happiness sometimes. And to have that thing of, you know, even watching the Palace game, I still always felt like we were going to win. Watching the ladies team, once we got it back to 1-1, I felt like we were going to win. And once we got second behind Miley Cyrus, I felt like we were going to win that as well. So it's been the perfect hat-trick.
And I suppose, Gav, the two lads have touched upon it there. You know, this is something that Everton fans just love to see, isn't it? You know, it kind of reminds us that football is just there to be fun, isn't it? You know, we watch football to have a bit of a laugh. And this, I think this weekend has kind of topped it all off, hasn't it?
I think fun's part of it. It's probably a little bit more than that. But yeah, it has been brilliant. I mean, it's one of the things you can get away with when you won your first three games of the season, not lost the first three. I just thought it was brilliant. I mean, last night, I mean, social media can be a pretty dark place on occasion, especially at the moment. But last night, I think I tweeted in my life for a certain generation of Everton fans, it's probably the best evening following the club since you played Bayern Munich. And And I did certainly felt like that. It was just really, really funny. Good to see I went off the charts, and it was, up 1,058 places as well, you know. And you see everybody else is up one or two. And yeah, it was brilliant. And the videos, all the videos we've seen have been brilliant and really imaginative. I like the one you posted this morning, The Simpsons, but the... the Laurel and Hardy one is a personal favourite of mine. And I can't believe it's about Laurel and Hardy on the Royal Blue podcast, by the way. But yeah, it's a reminder that for all the seriousness of it, I think it rightly gets our attention, people's livelihoods, isn't it? It can be fun on occasions. And last night, social media's made for things like that, isn't it? Just brilliant. Well done, everybody who contributed to it. A memorable evening.
Bees, as Spirit of the Blues, been blasting around your household this morning?
I mean, we discussed this earlier. I mean, when we're talking about the old school Everton tunes, Forever Everton for me, that's a personal favourite. But yeah, like we're saying, it's obviously it's captured, you know, that feel good factor. It's crept up very quickly over the last couple of weeks. We thought, you know, some really good buys over the summer. Went into the season with optimism, but you know, it was that tough clash at Tottenham, a fixture which in the last few years have been very difficult for Everton. So they've just built on that momentum from that 1-0 victory at Tottenham and carried that on. So let's not forget, out of these five victories, three of them have come away from home now. So yeah, it's been terrific. And like you say, just sort of epitomises the spirit amongst the fans at the moment.
I mean, Bees, we'll stick with you. I mean, we'll talk about the most recent of those victories this weekend, a 2-1 win over Crystal Palace. Now, what probably wasn't the best performance that we've seen from Everton this season, but that second half especially, it showed a lot of fight and resilience that maybe wasn't apparent all throughout last season, really, was it?
Yeah, it was sort of like the antithesis of those half-hearted displays that we saw, unfortunately, after lockdown. I mean, obviously there was huge debate over the penalty, and we'll go on to discuss that. But you know, after Everton had got their noses back in ahead and 2-1 up, yeah, like you said, it was a real resolute display. I thought there was a lot of testing moments from Crystal Palace's set pieces. You know, they were knocking it into the box quite a lot of times, and you know, there was a few scrambles in there. But yeah, in the end, it was a real hard fought victory, and like I said, no less satisfying than any of us. What it does, it keeps that momentum going now into another big week with two winnable home games, and yeah, it really continues that momentum. And as Dave mentioned, obviously that pass alone from James Rodriguez on his so-called weaker foot as well. I mean, yeah, just sort of shows the class in the fella, and you know, the different skill sets and attributes that this Everton team are currently showing.
And Preno, as Bees quite rightly mentioned there, it's another away game, isn't it? You know, we've struggled for so long on the road over the last few years, but Carlo Ancelotti really seems to be turning the tide in this situation, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. I think an awful lot of the credit for this has to go to the players that he's brought in. I think we said at the time, it's not just the quality of the players that he brings into the squad that makes the difference. It's the infectious attitude that has around the training pitch. I mean, when you see players like Alan and Doucouré come in, and obviously Rodriguez, it gives everybody else a little bit of a kick up the backside. They've got to raise their game just that little bit more every single day in training. And the interviews that we've heard have suggested that has been happening. Every training session has been conducted at an absolute 100%, because the players are looking over the shoulders now and they're realising that they're going to have to produce every single minute of every single training session to keep their places. Otherwise, you're going to have incidents like, you know, poor old Anthony Gordon, who's been playing out of his skin and can't even get in the squad on occasions for certain matches, which underlines, you know, so how this infectious attitude is working. We had the situation at the weekend where you've even got Yerry Mina reprising his best Andy Gray and trying to do, you know, so diving headers on the floor, you know, sort of full leverage. It just underlines again that the players are prepared to put in that little bit extra that maybe they weren't on occasions last season, certainly towards the end of the season. And to me, obviously, Ancelotti's had a lot to do with that in terms of his man management, but equally, the players that have been brought in have created an attitude. And it happens, you know, you only need one or two players that have that attitude, you know, correctly for it to be infectious and transmit around the squad. And then obviously confidence helps as well. You know, so when you've won a few games in succession, you believe that you can do it even more. And we're doing that at the moment. You know, it was a a very difficult game on Saturday. There was not as much quality as we've seen in the previous two games, but there was an awful lot more guts, resilience, resoluteness. Despite all the possession the Crystal Palace had in that last, 20 minutes, 25 minutes, you never really saw them create anything massively clear, because there was like a real doggedness and a real will to win and a real desire. And, much as we hark back sometimes, myself and Gavin, certainly, to the great team of the mid-80s, we think of how many games that team won by digging in and by showing guts and by showing resilience. Great football team that they were, they could also fight as well. And, to a smaller degree, we saw that a bit at the weekend as well, which is all heartening. There's more than one way to win a football match, and we showed a different way of doing it at the weekend.
Mm. And I suppose, Gav, we've got to talk about that winning goal. We've referenced it a little bit earlier. Come in quite controversial circumstances, of course. Like, we've heard all the discussions about it over the weekend. I think everybody's had their two cents about it. The handball rule just seems to be a bit of a farce, to be honest. Now, doesn't it? It's worked in Everton's favour this time. But what do you make of it overall?
We said it perfectly there. A bit of a farce, isn't it? Really, which when combined with VAR makes it even worse, doesn't it? You've got two farcical systems or rules going on at the same time. One exacerbates the other. I don't like it. I can only join what Steve Bruce said yesterday and what two or three other people have said quite publicly. I mean, it's this unnatural position, isn't it? But what is an unnatural position? That varies for players. Some players might be temporarily being in an unnatural position. And it's still a very subjective thing for referees. I think when you look at it, even it's half and half, isn't it? I mean, he's not exactly sticking his arm up in the air, but then again, his arm's not close. But, it's not really like a standing to attention, is he? Like, unlike the first one, the first one with Ben Richarlison.
Yeah,
that was quite clear, like that. That was unnatural. This one was a bit more of a grey area. It was one that, even if they didn't have the rules, some referees would actually give a thing. Some wouldn't. The irony of it is that if he did not touch the ball, Richarlison was offside anyway. Genius header. Is it that the play would have stopped anyway? That was the irony of it. But I can only join the cause what other people said. It's a farce. I mean, seen in the Spurs game yesterday, didn't you? Another one. It just ruins the game for a lot of people, and I can see why we benefited from it on Saturday. Might be our turn not to benefit it during in the next week or two. But it was giveable, but the whole system is wrong, isn't it, Ad?
I mean, Sam, as Gav rightly says there, it wasn't just Everton who had this situation at the weekend. Obviously, we saw a very similar incident in the Spurs v Newcastle game yesterday. There was a similar incident right at the end of the Brighton against Manchester United game as well. It seemed like this weekend was almost a bit of a tipping point for this handball rule. Do you think that maybe it just needs to be changed further down the line?
It's a tough one, isn't it? Because as long as it's benefiting Everton, I think just keep it. keep it rolling. But it's just tough to know what is right anymore. I've seen that someone had kind of had Gary Lineker off on Twitter today, that a couple of years ago he'd said the handball rule should just be changed to make it nice and simple. If it hits one on the arm, it's a pen or a free kick. And then yesterday he was obviously tweeting, it's killing the game, it needs to be changed ASAP and stuff. And I think that kind of highlights for me, I don't think anyone really knows what the best way forward is for me. And I think that's what's so difficult, that we can complain about this, but then a few years ago we were also complaining about the old interpretation. And so it's a difficult one, really, and I feel like it is going to just come round, and I think it'll probably bite every single team. Eventually, I think the shows on Match of the Day yesterday, there was 19 penalties for handball in the Premier League last season, but in Serie A and La Liga, where they have the VAR, that last season there was 48 and 46, something like that. So it shows you that, it is a lot stricter. But I think for me, the worst part about it is it is now killing the thing of, you celebrate goals and stuff like that. But in the back of your mind, you're like, hang on, is this, going to get pulled back for you know, and if it was an important goal for Everton, imagine a last-minute winner in the derby and all of a sudden they're checking the handball on the halfway line where, you know, James isn't even looking at it, slaps him in the hand and it doesn't get given. So, you know, it is so difficult at the moment. So, you know, obviously there is something wrong and it needs fixing, but at the moment I couldn't even begin to start where it should get changed or it should get fixed. It's so difficult.
I mean, Bees, if you were a defender now in trying to stop an attacker in the Premier League, where would you put your hands?
You'd be going around like the Duke of Edinburgh with your arms behind your back all the time, wouldn't you? Reckon for our younger listeners. It's difficult, isn't it? Because, I mean, watching the game, the first one, I thought, no, he's not going to give that. But with the second one, I thought, no, there's a chance here. You wonder as well, because the first one wasn't given, because the referee goes over and has a look himself, doesn't he? He was invited over, Kevin Friend, was it, to have to look on the screen by the side of the pitch. It is difficult, isn't it? I mean, yeah, unless you put yourself playing in a straitjacket, your arms behind your back or something like that. I mean, what can you actually do? It's very difficult if these are going to be given. I mean, the only thing we can say is that everyone's in the same boat, but it's bizarre. And if you're getting, like, Sam quotes possibly twice as many penalties or so. But I think the real problem, as Sam also alluded to, is this when play gets taken back, whether it's a handball or something else. That's the big concern with VAR, because, you know, is anything real anymore until, you know, a couple of minutes down the line and then everyone's had another look at it? It sort of takes away that immediacy from football. That's the big controversy for me and the issue that we have to get over. I mean, whether it's handball or not, I mean, whether we like the laws of the game, that's what they are at the moment. It's this bringing back play. I mean, you can almost have, I think it's happened in the past, where it's like a two-goal swing, isn't it? Because they could disallow a goal at one end and then say, actually, it should have been a penalty down the other or something like that. So that for me, is the biggest issue that we have on VAR, regardless of what happened over this past weekend.
And I think, Preno, as well, what another thing that people were making the point of is when the referee goes over to the side of the pitch, obviously he's seeing it all in slow motion, and obviously things always look worse in slow motion, really, don't they?
They do. It's been a bad weekend for the system, but it was introduced because they want consistency across the board, and they've got consistency now, but they've gone too far. I mean, okay, the Everton one, I thought there was every chance that was going to be given. Not the first one that wasn't given, but, you know, the one that was, because his arm was away from his side. And it was a bit disingenuous of Roy Hodgson to complain so bitterly about it, given that he benefited 7 days previously at Old Trafford from one which was, you know, so even harsher than that. And, you know, to the extent whereby even once he got the penalty, it was retaken because De Gea had, like, strayed half a yard off his line. So he's been a bit disingenuous there. But just listening to, I think it was TalkSport this afternoon, and it just gave a little ray of positivity in that this system was introduced in the Bundesliga before it happened in the Premier League, and there was the usual absolute spate of penalties. It, like, doubled by about 100%, but then it's settled down again now, and I think, you know, it's back to a similar kind of figure as it was pre this system, because players are learning. They're basically, you know, like Chris said before, they are running around the penalty area with their arms behind their backs. You know, they're not leaping in natural positions as much as they can. Now, obviously, you can't rule that out totally. Poor Eric Dier. I mean, what was he supposed to do there? That was just absolutely ludicrous. You know, he had his back to the game. And I don't really know what you can do. It won't change, certainly in the next 18 months, 2 years, because it's got to go before the FIFA board. They've got to rule on it. The next meeting isn't for... It's about at least another 6 months, so it's not going to, you know, sort of change in time for this season, possibly not for next season. So we're stuck with it. So the players are going to have to learn to live with it, as we are as supporters as well. And there are going to be occasions when you're going to get horribly wound up and really upset by it. I mean, Brighton, what was going on at the weekend in that game? You know, a decision given after the final whistle had gone. You know, try and work that one out. But I suppose you could argue that justice, you know, in inverted commas, was done in the end, because it was a handball and, you know, Morpé's hand was above his head. So we're going to suffer and we need to brace ourselves for that. We benefited at the weekend. Although, having said that, I could see that being given. I mean, when he ran across to the monitor, I was thinking, this is going to be given. It should be given. And it was. And then, you know, although having said that, to go off on a tangent completely, the commentary on Amazon Prime, was anybody else completely wound up by that?
I think Ali McCoist must still be crying in his bedroom now.
We're even trying to make an issue of Richarlison's run-up. Is he allowed to do what?
Yeah.
Is he allowed to do what? So, yeah, I mean, we're going to have to, you know, get used to the fact that we're going to get wound up by a number of things this season. So it's not going to change. We're just going to have to put up with it. Just focus on the positives. You know, we've won a load of games. We've got Spirits of the Blues at number one, and the ladies are in the semi-finals of the FA Cup. Life's good.
Ali McCoist, though, did like, as like Carlo Ancelotti, like robbed his house in the past or something. He was absolutely, anything we did, he was just fuming, wasn't he? But in the end, it made it even better just to know that he was crying sweet, sweet tears by the end of that game.
It was unusual. I was surprised at Clive Tilsley as well, because obviously Clive, you know, those who are a little bit younger than myself won't remember, he started his career on Merseyside for Radio City, and it was very, very good when Everton were in the glory days, reporting on them, and was always very positive about Everton. So I don't know what got into him at the weekend, because he did really have a bee in his bonnet about that penalty, didn't he?
And I mean, Gav, going back to probably a bit more positive matters on the pitch for Everton, Dominic Calvert-Lewin on the score sheet again. 5 goals already to start this season off. It's been perfect for him, really, hasn't it?
It has. First since, I think, Tommy Lawton, I think, to get 5 in his first 3 league games. I think there's only 4 of us, I think, have done it in our history, in the top flight at least. So he's in great company. Again, on Saturday, he didn't have exactly like a lot of touches of the ball. He didn't really affect the game. As you would expect. But he was in the right place at the right time. I mean, he got a bit lucky with the finish, to be honest with you. I thought the goalie should have done better. Those are the type of goals that go in, isn't it, when you're on a hot Scotland streak. And then another day, if you've not scored for 10 games like he had, like this recent one, the goalie catches it. So, yeah, in the right place at the right time. That's the difference, isn't it? I mean, I suspect this time last year, Dominic may have been 4 or 5 yards behind the play. There, but he got himself into, he anticipated the ball better, and so he got that reward, and he was okay. I mean, some of his hold up play in the second half was a bit patchy near the end, but he did okay, and you can't ask for better than that. Isn't he the top scorer in Europe? He was on Saturday night, something like that, I believe.
Wouldn't be surprised.
So good goal, good finish. And generally quiet game for him as well, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. But who's complaining?
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
And Bees, we've talked a little bit about the build-up to the goal with James Rodriguez's pass, of course, but Seamus Coleman was the man who got this assist at the end of the day, and you know he's been really good over these past few games, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think people were wondering how he was going to combine with James in front of him. Obviously, for all the many plus points that James Rodriguez brings. One of them isn't necessarily covering every blade of grass and getting up and down. He was noted he didn't make a single sprint in inverted commas against West Bromwich Albion. So people thinking, you know, Seamus Coleman, as great as he was, and particularly as a younger man getting up and down, you know, wrong side of 30 now, how's he going to cope with having to do all those overlaps and maybe... have somebody who's not tracking back in front of him. But yeah, the dynamic is working really well, and to be honest, Seamus has been looking full of energy and some really good combinations getting up and down without obviously forgetting his defensive responsibility as well. And it's a big year for Seamus. Carlo's come out and said what a great captain he is, what a great inspiration to the other players. But I think from his own position now, it was very much up in the air. The right-back role, Jibril Sidibé on loan last season, and now Jonjo Kenny's come back. So, you know, Seamus is having to fight almost to prove that he's still at this level. I mean, he's still captain of Ireland as well, without always playing for them these days. So, yeah, it's a big year for Seamus. I mean, he's potentially, you know, we keep going on about ending this trophy drought. You know, he could be the man to lift that trophy if they do. So that'd be an absolutely huge occasion for him if that was to come. So, but I'm sure he's enjoying leading this team and leading this Everton renaissance just right now.
And Sam, we were discussing Sheamus at the weekend where we and I were saying this was almost a little bit of a throwback performance in a way, because he was up and down that line, but he's a bit of a different player now, isn't he? And he seems to be growing into that sort of new role that he's creating for himself, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think there was a bit of a downer on Sheamus maybe for the last 12 to 18 months, but I think what we're seeing at the moment is a lot of players, how much better they all look when they've got a midfield that can actually run, kick, tackle a football in front of them. And, you know, I think Sheamus is, you know, obviously we all accept that he's not going to be the kind of Buccaneer full back, you know, converted from a, well, moved back from that kind of initial right midfield position that Moyes put him when he first broke into the team, because he was just so full of energy. And, you know, he got older and he won't be able to do that. But, you know, there's still very much a similar player in there who also understands, I think, his defensive responsibilities and his, you know, his responsibilities as a captain and a leader of the football club. So, you know, but it's, and it's not just Coleman either. I think Michael Keane has looked very good since the start of this season. You know, he looks like a bit of a change player, but I also do accept that I think you need to see it over a prolonged period of time, because we've said this about Keane now 3 or 4 times where you've been like, oh, he's playing well, and then he has a little bit of a dip in form and confidence. So hopefully he can keep that going. You know, Mina obviously struggled a little bit against West Brom, but I think other than that, he's been decent as well. And Luca Dean seems to be back to his best as well. I think he's kind of been another one that might have, just because of how sexy the new signings have been, he might have just slipped under the radar a little bit about how good and how consistent he's been so far this season. And, you know, okay, lower league opposition, but I thought he was outstanding against Fleetwood Town. And for a man who's played for Barca and PSG and the likes, to just kind of slip into centre-back Fleetwood Town on a Wednesday night, no complaints, and put in the kind of performance he does, I think is a mark of his character and a testament to his professionalism. So every single person in that back four is looking a lot better this season, and I think Sheamus epitomises that.
I mean, Preno, there would have been those at the start of the transfer window who thought maybe the signing a right-back might have been a priority for Everton this summer. But do you think maybe Sheamus's performances mixed with, obviously, with, I think John Joe Kenny's been playing quite well when he's come in for the League Cup games as well. Do you think maybe that's changed a few minds?
I think possibly it has. I mean, Sheamus has surprised me this season. I don't mind admitting that I was one of the people last season that thought maybe we've seen the best of Sheamus Coleman now. Maybe the injury has finally done for him. I know we're never going to quite see those effervescent performances again. But he has been superb this season. And he's had to have been, because, you know, he's had to perform the way he has to allow James to have that freedom in front of him. Because, you know, he plays nominally off the right, even though he does like float all over the pitch, which means that there's an awful lot of defensive responsibility placed on Sheamus Coleman's shoulders, which he's accepted and embraced, and yet still found the energy and still found the penetration to get into the opposition box and create openings. And he's done that really. We're seeing the Sheamus Coleman that we saw pre the broken leg now. And I think maybe it just took that little bit of time for him to overcome that. And that Carlo Ancelotti quote at the weekend about him being the best captain he's ever worked with, and this is a man who's worked with, you know, Sergio Ramos, he's worked with, you know, some of the greats, you know, so in world football. I don't think it was done as just like a cute psychological ploy. I think he genuinely meant it, because, you know, Coleman has been absolutely excellent as a leader and as a player. So, yeah, fair play. Not for the first time, I was completely and utterly wrong on that one. And Coleman has been very, very good. John Joe Kenny, he's a decent backup. I still think possibly we need a bit more quality in there, but maybe I'm going to be wrong again on that one. But, you know, Coleman especially has been excellent. Yeah, absolutely top class. And helped, you know, as I think Sam said earlier as well, by the fact that we do have a much better midfield in front of the entire back four now. So they've got that confidence because they've got Alan screening them in front, because they've got Decore's energy, and it does help those guys at the back perform that bit better. Michael Keane was another who I thought was very, very good at the weekend, and I accept that we do need to see it more consistently from him. But yeah, he's looked a different player this season again as well. So once again, positives galore, you know, so things are looking pretty good.
Well, fingers crossed we can keep the momentum going for yet another game that Everton have got on the horizon. Everton are taking on West Ham at Goodison Park on Wednesday in the next round of the League Cup. And Gav, I think somebody mentioned it before, this is a winnable game, isn't it?
Even if we were playing Barcelona of Guardiola would say is a winnable game for Everton at the moment, to be honest with you. Yeah, absolutely. You know, we said on Friday that there's an international break, isn't there, after Saturday's fixtures, and these sorts of back-to-back League Cup games have fallen quite right for us, given the size of the squad that we've got, which I think Carlo said is overloaded, plus the fact that without a pre-season as such, players need to be given quite a bit of game time, and I think that's enabled us to put out some really, you know, decent strength sides. Completely winnable for a number of reasons, A, home, and B, I'm not sure what team West Ham will put out on Wednesday, given their resources and their perhaps projected struggle maybe this season. Be interesting to see how seriously they take it. So it's a massive opportunity, even if West Ham were a full strength. I'm not going to predict as yet, but hopefully we can, you know, it's a more than winnable game. It's a game you would expect us to emerge victorious from.
Bees, what do you make of the West Ham game? Would you? I know you've been an advocate for not making very many changes in the League Cup. Would you stick with that? Like, would you try and play a strong team again for the visit to West Ham?
Definitely for Premier League opponents. I mean, like I said before, I called for a strong team against Salford City, and then Carlo made a bit of a monkey of me, made 10 changes and won with ease. And then I thought, well, go a little bit stronger away to Fleetwood, which he did, and then he won comfortably there. But then, yeah, I think for a game against a fellow Premier League team, I mean, whoever that is, or whether David Moyes is in the stadium or not, and I'm told he won't be because of that. He's going to be managing remotely. So, yeah, this is opened up for Everton, and this is as it stands, Everton's best chance for glory. Now we're winning, you're through to the is it the quarterfinals after that? Obviously, when you've won what you've won, all that Carlo Ancelotti's won, the biggest prizes in the game, multiple Champions Leagues, major trophies in all of Europe's big leagues, perhaps the Carabao Cup isn't initially at the forefront of your priorities. But yeah, keep the run going, keep that momentum going. And as Gav said, whoever Everton will be playing at the moment, you'd like to think it was a winnable tie, but definitely the way it's opened up now, they've got to be going for this. I mean, you've got to start somewhere. I mean, Manchester City don't disrespect the League Cup. Pep Guardiola's always happy to try and keep that trophy count up and take that as seriously as possible. Okay, he's got a lot more options in reserve, but I'd go as strong as possible. Obviously, he's going to be a few. He'll know who possibly needs a rest and who to keep fresh at the weekend. But, you know, I'd like to see more or less, you know, a full-strength team for this one.
I mean, Sam, we could be seeing a few changes. You know, we could be seeing some strong players still come into the team again. You know, Niels Nkunku's obviously played very well over his League Cup appearances. Anthony Gordon's another one who's impressed in the League Cup. Bernard, playing centrally, has been playing really well in those games as well. You know, would you try and bring those three in again, or like would you agree with Breeze and try and keep it as strong as possible?
I think you just need a mix. I think, you know, Nkunku has got to play. Bernard probably got to play after his performance, Iwobi. And I think if you do get a nice mix, then it can benefit you both ways, because you're not going to get through a Premier League season without injuries, suspensions, dips in form. You know, so, and this is obviously what people have now realised, that you need a big squad to do well, because obviously when that happens, if you've just got 11, 12, 13 lads, as obviously was the norm 20-odd years ago, then you struggle then when you need the others to come in. So, you know, hopefully we can keep winning matches with a couple of these lads playing. Maybe is it time for a Decore or an Allen to come in and kind of shore up the midfield? Maybe. But look, you know, that team that beat Fleetwood, you're going back to Goodison. I don't think West Ham are great even with that result. A great result, obviously, for David Moyes yesterday. But Richarlison, Calvert-Lewin both started, Keane started, Dean started, albeit at centre-back. So, you know, I'd say the team probably would only maybe need one or two minor changes, and the rest of the lads, I think Kenny deserves to play as well. So, you know, I'd probably bring in a centre-back for Dean, which will have to be Keane, and we see how it's going. But, you know, people have pointed out that I think the League Cup was Mourinho's first trophy in England. Might have been Guardiola's as well. But it's about getting that taste for winning. And I do just think that, as the lads are saying here, it's a chance. And, you know, you do still have to get lucky with the draw. And we probably still are going to have to beat two or three teams of the so-called top six to win it if we want to win it. But once you got that first taste of silverware with a manager like Carlo Ancelotti, you just don't know where this team could eventually go from what we've seen at the first three games of the season. But I'm not getting carried away yet, but probably will book me train to Wembley after this today.
And I mean, Preno, as Sam rightly says there, you know, this is a massive opportunity for Everton. I feel like we say it every year when the League Cup comes around, but Everton have never won this competition. And as Sam rightly says, you know, if you get that sort of winning feeling about this squad, then, you know, it really could have the opportunity to spitball into something much more in the future, couldn't it?
Yeah, 100%. And then it comes from the manager, it comes from the very top. I mean, he's made it perfectly clear that, you know, he sees this competition as an opportunity. We saw that with his team selection at Fleetwood. You know, we never expected to see Richarlison and Dominic Calvert-Lewin both in that starting lineup, and yet they were. And I think we'll see probably a slightly stronger side again. I mean, obviously, Bernard will come in and Konku will come in, Sigurdsson will come in. But I still think we'll see, you know, sort of smattering of the players that maybe played at the weekend. We've had an extra day to prepare. I mean, West Ham played the last match on Sunday night, so they've only had, you know, literally 2.5-3 days to get ready for this. So we might see a few more changes in their starting lineup than in ours. But like you say, it's an opportunity. You know, if you can get through to the quarterfinals, it's then quite a long break before the draw is made, you know, before, you know, the final, you know, sort of last eight games are played. And who knows? But Ancelotti's made it clear, you know, it's a big competition, so it should be. You know, it's an opportunity to win something. I mean, how many times have we been so frustrated in the past to see weakened teams, you know, selected, and we go out at home to Norwich and we go out, you know, against teams that we, you know, deserve to have or should have beaten. So, no, it should absolutely be, you know, treated absolutely seriously. And Carlo Ancelotti will take it seriously. And it's going to be tough, you know, so we're second guessing what, you know, David Moyes is going to select for his starting lineup. We don't know, to be perfectly honest. But you'd imagine, you know, they would see it as a bit of an opportunity themselves as well. But, you know, you want a home draw. You want a team, you know, like maybe West Ham. So, yeah, let's get behind it, you know, and hope that it, you know, so it goes away. The only downside about it is it clashes with the Everton ladies semi-final. So you can't watch both. I think the record button is going to have to be used on Wednesday night. But yeah, it is a big, big opportunity. And I think it'll be treated as such by the manager and by the players that he sends out.
Mm. And Preno, we'll stick with you. It's time for the customary predictions. Everton v West Ham at Goodison Park on Wednesday. What are you thinking?
Oh, I wasn't too far away at the weekend, was it? I went for 3-1. And I just thought at the end we were going to pinch another one and get it absolutely right. But, you know, 2-1 I'll settle for. So this time, wow. It's a difficult one to call because, again, this competition, you don't know the strength of the respective lineups. I suspect West Ham will make a number of changes, more than we will. I'm going to go with the momentum that is with Everton at the moment to continue. Oh, I would settle for a nice, comfortable, steady 2-0 home win. And I'll stick with that. 2-0 to the Toffees.
Okay. Gav, what's your thinking? I've got to say, by the way, I got the prediction spot on for the Palace game. So I, in our league table, I'm coming for you. So you better get this.
Okay, yeah. Can I just say, Preno only said 3-1 because I said 3-1, by the way. Some sort of form of insurance because I'm the top guy, you know, at this season.
You're gonna copy me now, aren't
you? Not for long. Not for long.
Yeah. I think it's going to be more comfortable than what we think. I'm going to go with 3-0 to the Mighty Blues.
Okay.
Yeah.
Love that. Bees, what are you thinking?
Same as Dave, 2-0.
2-0. Sam?
I think it's hard sometimes because we're on such a good run. It's hard to be so optimistic. So I'm thinking it's going to go 6-0, but I'm going to play it safe with 3-1.
To Everton.
I'm shocked.
To the Blues.
I think it's going to be a little more comfortable than that. I'm going to go 4-1 to Everton.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm predicting some goals, but like, After the antics from Pickford last weekend, I've not got much hope of a clean sheet, to be honest. But, you know, I've been wrong before, so we'll see. Thank you, lads, for joining me for what's been another joyous edition of the Royal Blue podcast. I'm off to wax spirits of the Blues back on for the rest of the day while I finish off this work. And thank you all for joining us. Don't forget, you can rate and review us on wherever you get your podcasts, and you can subscribe to us and find us on Facebook and Twitter, and make sure to send us loads of Spirits of the Blues videos, because we will enjoy probably every single one. Thank you for listening. This has been the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.